This podcast is brought to you with limited interruption by Rudy Luther Toyota. Whether looking for an exciting brand new Toyota, a certified pre-owned vehicle, or getting quality routine maintenance and service for your vehicle, Rudy Luther Toyota is the place to go. Rudy Luther Toyota, the southeast corner of 394 and 169 in Golden Valley.
AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show for your Monday, Martin Luther King Day. Howdy. I hope you're doing well. I'm doing a lot better here. First of all, I want to make sure I say a big thank you to Brett and to Todd Mickelson filling in for us kind of on short notice. Brett, how are you feeling? Are you feeling okay?
Yeah, I'm feeling. Yeah. Fortunately, didn't get COVID from you or anyone else, so that's always a positive right now.
You are the person I was most concerned about. And I still am, and we still have to be concerned about it because, I mean, you, I think, are about the only person. We of course, whenever Brett and I do interaction, you know, witty banter, he's in studio with me, and on Tuesday of last week, you were in studio with me, and the only thing separating us was a plexiglass because neither one of us, you know, we're doing radio hosts, we generally don't wear a mask when we're talking, and so I have been very concerned. I felt guilt beyond guilt. You are feeling fine, though, are you?
Indeed I am, yes.
Can I swab your nose when I get into the station?
I'm going to take a pass on that one.
Hey, I won't go as deep as the woman that went today. I mean, she was going for a brain tickle. I mean, it was like a mummy ritual at this point. Yikes! But, you know, I have to... Okay, so what happened is, for everyone out there that might not know, how much did you share, Brett? You told everyone I had COVID, right?
Yeah, I told everyone you had COVID, and a little bit of a scare at your house with some... family members and a boyfriend. So yes.
Well, it's not my boyfriend. Well, yeah, he's told me he's fine on many levels, but we need to get into that right now. No, okay. So what had happened is my daughter's boyfriend tested positive for COVID on Monday of last week. And my daughter was a little concerned and she wanted to go get tested. So we're like, okay, fine, no problem. We'll get you tested. And there are two reasons why I said, you know what, I'll get tested with you. One is I'd had this, what I thought was a little bit of an allergy. I mean, I'm one of those people that, you know, if I go, like, I go into a dusty room, I'll have for a few days. You know, you get that too, don't you, Brett? Like a dusty room where you go around, like, you know, you go out into the woods or something like that, and there's like cottonwood floating around, all of a sudden you're going to get the congestion. You get that at all?
Yeah, especially in the fall, I get that a lot, yes.
Yeah, it depends on the season. And so I thought I might have some allergies, but what had happened is, and you and I talked about this, I got a notification from the state saying you had been exposed to COVID, but for the life of me, we couldn't figure out where this was. And it's something that, by the way, that notification comes with iPhones, and the iPhone, you can sign up on an iPhone to get the notification. And I did. And I got it, but it didn't tell me where, when, who. It just says, you know, someone around you's got a crush on you. And you're like, uh-oh, who could it be? Is it Patrick? It might be. We were concerned about that. So I went and got tested. So my daughter tests negative. I tested positive. And all of a sudden, you know, I want to be honest with you. On Thursday was a depressing day for me. Because it would not in the sense being that you know, and many people know of the health issues I had last year. I had a kidney issue and then I had hip replacement surgery. And so I was looking forward to 2022 being relatively health scare free. And so all of a sudden, here we are, not even a half a month into it, on the 13th of January, and I was testing positive for COVID. And so I was frustrated there. I never once regretted or resented any of the vaccine, the booster I've got, mask wearing, social distancing, none of that. I 100% stand by all that, and I feel very confident that was in my mind the reason why I tested negative today. The reason why I think is because of, you know, bluntly because of my vaccine and my booster and the fact that I'm relatively safe. So I think that that's a big part of it. But, I mean, it was just kind of depressing. I ended up staying – my son Charlie is, of course, at the University of Minnesota now. And so I stayed in his room for basically 4 days, most of the time with a mask on, most of the time separated, you know, being, you know, I think the closest I was to any family member was, you know, across the house on one floor. I mean, it was kind of one of those things where we'd clear out if I needed to come upstairs to go to the, you know, use the kitchen. I stayed down in the basement for the most part. Still can't believe Dax. What was the end of that Cowboys game? What was he thinking? Running 17 yards. You got 10 seconds left to go in the game. What are you, a moron? I mean, come on. Anyway, you know, stuff like that. I mean, I kind of hunkered down. I understand very clearly, that my experience was light to moderate, and it is frustrating being. On quarantine, it is, but it's nothing compared to being in a hospital room. It sure as hell is nothing compared to being on a ventilator in an ICU, and it sure as hell is nothing compared to being dead. So I don't mind vaccinating. I don't know. I mean, Brett, isn't it true that now that, of course, I'm vaccinated, I'm boosted, but now I've got the antibodies for coronavirus in me, so I'm like a superhero now, right?
Oh, yeah. I think you can just go run and start coughing on everybody.
The cougher. That's where that's the superhero we need in this day and age. Yeah, he's going to resonate.
No. You can say, I'm boosted. I've had COVID. You're fine.
Well, I'm not.
Lung in the grocery store.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, time for fiery phlegm. No, I'm not. I am not going to explore the full superpower capabilities of the coffer. I am not going to do that. Although I probably will. Let's just be honest with you. I will say this. I'm still going to mask. I'm still going to social distance because I, you know, here's a wacky, crazy thing. I actually care about my my fellow person out there. And I'm going to get into this. I'm going to get into needless suffering. And I'm going to talk about that here in a second. So we had a long time thinking about where I possibly could have gotten this. And the smart money, if I had to say where I contracted COVID, it would probably be the Ridgedale YMCA. I mean, if I had to take a guess, because Brett, you know me, first of all, I'm not exactly, you know, in the age of Omicron, I'm not exactly hitting the clubs. I'm not going and catching, the showings of Spider-Man. That's just not happening. So, I mean, it's the, you know, we're trying to, you know, rack our brains here about where we possibly could have gotten this. And the most likely scenario was the Y. And the reason why is that if you go to the Ridgedale Y, now, I just got it, to be honest, I just got a notification from the Ridgedale Y because they're in Minnetonka. They are basically all now going to mask because Minnetonka now has a mask mandate for the city. But if you go into the wait area and if you go into the training area, there's a lot of people, including a lot of old people, who are mouth breathers. And I, you know, it's... My wife has been there when there have been people like not next to her, but like three or four machines down from her who are coughing like crazy and not wearing a mask. And, you know, people have actually tried to go give these people masks saying, you need to wear this. And I'm not wearing it because they don't think that this is, I mean, they're selfish jackasses and that's what it is. But of all the places I could have been, I mean, I go to the grocery store. We talk about that a lot. I usually do that on a Thursday morning at 7:30. There's no one in there. It's easy to avoid everyone in there. So that it's not that. I mean, we've been going to church, but it's been somewhat, you know, it's very social distance. It's not like there's anyone near us at all, really. I mean, they've got a limited amount of people that are going to church. I've been out walking dogs. I've been hiking in the parks. Generally, trust me when I say out hiking in the woods is not exactly a high volume human being activity. I'll come back to that in a sec. So the only place I could possibly be that, I mean, that if I had to peg it for some place would be the Y with the gym, which brings up Matt's point. For God's sakes, be careful in the gym. Wear a mask. You really want to. Because, I mean, not only is it likely I got my COVID there, but then how many, I mean, I went and worked out on that Tuesday, the same day I possibly exposed you, Brett. And I keep saying to myself, it's like, now I'm wearing a mask. I'm being careful. I try to socially distance, but you know, you get that, you get Johnny mouth breather sitting next to you on a weight machine. I don't want to get you sick. I don't want to get you ill. So I want to be careful here, and I'm not going to take this lightly. Now, I did have one or two people raise an eyebrow. Yesterday, I did go on out and hike the beautiful Normandale Lake Park in Bloomington, which is the one out on just south of 494 and Highway 100 there. It's a nice little lake. It's right by the high jump, the ski high jump they have over there in Highland Park. And they were going off. The guys were going off of it yesterday. Wow, that was cool. Not something I'm ever going to do. I have, my days of having a flexible enough body to pull something like that off are just, they're long gone. So, but we were hiking around. Now, I drove there separately. I parked by, you know, alone, you know, in an area that there was no other cars by it, no other people. I got my crampons on because I'm Johnny Safety. And I walked around the lake and, you know, didn't really have any problems. Didn't run into anyone. So was, and also I think that there's something about the fact that it was 18 degrees. So, you know, were there some people that walked about 7-8 feet away from us? Yeah, I can't believe COVID in just a passing would be able to survive the 18 degrees outside. But still, I social distance. I wore a mask. I was there. I technically was still on quarantine, but I don't feel as if I, you know, doing that. It wasn't going to the grocery store. I wasn't going to a Target store. I wasn't going to the boat show or anything like that. I mean, I was out in the woods, you know, hiking a trail by myself just to get out of the house because I'd gotten stir crazy. And I think that, you know, I think that if you take the precautions, you're wearing a mask, you are socially distanced, and you're going, go to one of these trails where there it is, it's, they're not going to run into many people in winter. Trust me, winter hiking is not exactly the craze in Minnesota. Cross-country skiing is. Dear Lord, all those trails are packed. I was walking over the Highland was last weekend. It looked like 50 people on the cross-country trail just as I was walking past. I'm like, good luck with all that. But, you know, it's you can get out there. You can get alone. You just got to make sure you're being careful. And the onus is on you. The onus is on me. If I was out there walking and all of a sudden there was a crowd of people, I can't walk through that crowd of people. I can't rush walk through that crowd. I have to make the time to go around them or at least let them know, hey, I got COVID. I'll wait over here until you guys are past. That's what you had to do. Nothing like that happened. It was just, I was, and my wife and the kids, they drove over separately. I walked about 20, 30 feet behind them the entire time. You got to be careful. And so I think that that's an important thing. I will say, here's another one too, in regards to the healthcare industry and COVID and just another shocker that I heard this and I'm like, what? So I got tested today. And the nurse that did it, delightful, very nice. She did a very good job. And as I joke about, she went deep. She has to go deep. That's the deep test. And in Minnesota, especially in winter, they need to do both tests, the rapid test and then the deep schnoz attack because, you know, of the cold, you know, and want to make sure you're getting a sample from deep within the nose. And I the woman was there and as she's, you know, tickling the brain, I made sure my mask was over my mouth at least and breathe through my mouth. She said, breathe through your mouth. And I said, I brought the mask up. She goes, I really appreciate you doing that, covering your mouth with the mask. And I said, really? She goes, yeah. And then she goes, the reason why is because most people aren't wearing masks. What? Really? What? Still? No. Really? Apparently so. Apparently so. Apparently there's a lot of people that are still not wearing masks, and that is, come on, if you're going to a testing site, you've got to be wearing your mask. You absolutely have to be wearing a mask. You got to, these people, we need them to be healthy and be testing. Don't be that selfish. So, Brett, here you go. I want to run through the movies I have watched over the last few days, because I mean, it gave me some time, all right? Now, have you seen Eternals yet?
I have not seen that one, no.
Good. I thought it was pretty good. I mean, it's very different from every other Marvel movie they've done, and it's in that Marvel Cinematic Universe, but I thought it was pretty good. I also watched The Matrix Resurrection. That's pretty good, too. And, I thought they took that in a nice direction. I thought that was kind of interesting. I watched The Tomorrow War. That's that Chris Pratt thing that's on Amazon. Yeah. It's not Armageddon bad. It's not that bad. But it is not good. Because, I mean, it's just too ambitious of a plot. And so it feels like there's large portions of that movie are not there. Okay, how did we get here? Really? Okay. We've changed locales all of a sudden. All right. And yada, 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 Palpatine, that sort of thing. It's kind of one of those, they leave out a few plot points to say the least. I did rewatch Deadpool 1 and Deadpool 2 because, dear God, those movies are funny. They are funny films. Have you seen either one of them?
Oh, yeah, I've seen both the Deadpools. Yeah, yeah.
Okay. So there is one that I did watch. I watched Power of the Dog. That's the Benedict Cumberbatch, the Oscar, the one that's getting a lot of Oscar buzz. That movie is tough. That movie is great. It's great as in it leaves you emotionally drained. It's like watching Apocalypse Now. And you watch Apocalypse Now, and I've watched Apocalypse Now probably 20 times. Every time I watch it, I come off feeling like I'm exhausted because that movie is just such an insane piece of film. Same thing for Power of the Dog, and it is really good. Benedict Cumberbatch, I still have yet to watch one or two of the other movies that is getting a lot of buzz for best actor, but I can't see him not winning it. I mean, he really was. Well, then again, there was a year George Clooney and Michael Clayton, he should have won that hands down, and he didn't. So I guess, I mean, it's not a slam dunk he's going to win it, but that was pretty good. And then I went back, I watched a movie I'd been meaning to watch for years and just never did it, Oblivion with Tom Cruise. Do you remember that movie?
Oh, yeah, yeah. That was a couple of years ago. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, it was. It's one of those films where didn't get the chance to see it. You know, in the days before streaming, it wasn't out. And now that it is on streaming, usually there's like six or seven other movies that I want to watch. So I burned through a bunch. I watched that. That movie is shockingly good. You saw that one, right?
Yeah, yeah, I saw that one, yep.
Am I crazy? Is that movie actually really good?
Yeah, I'd say it's a very solid movie, yeah.
Between that one, what's the one where he does the fighting? The fighting where he keeps reliving the day again over and over again. Do you remember that one? Oh, with the aliens and it's not the Tomorrow War. That's it's not the Day After Tomorrow. We'll figure it out. But those movies, the Mission Impossible movies, Cruise and Jack Reacher. I watched Jack Reacher. He's had some very good films in the last 10 years. So.
And he hasn't aged in 10 years either.
He hasn't. What the hell is up? Dear God, I look horrible. Although, have you ever seen him in The Outsiders? Whoa. He got a full dental plan somewhere between The Outsiders and Risky Business. Holy God, he was a vampire back then. I mean, he had like 80 teeth in his head. Seriously, have you ever seen a picture of him back then?
I'd have to go back and look.
He wasn't nearly as attractive as he was today. He needed some polishing, I guess you could say. And they polished. I mean, he looks great now. But yeah, It's go see Tom Cruise and the Outsiders are like, whoa. It's not like Ryan Gosling in the Disney, you know, in the Mickey Mouse Club either. I mean, that was just a young version of Gosling. This is just, ugh. Who hit you in the face with the 2x4 repeatedly? Yikes. He cleaned up nice. Matt's Movie Corner, there you go for the day. 952-946-6205. When I come back, I'll get Gary in here, and I'm going to start talking about needless suffering, because the reality is, yeah, there's too much of that going on right now, and I'll explain about that when I do return. It's the Matt McNeil Show for your Martin Luther King Day right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205 is the phone number. Gary is in Minneapolis. He has been holding. Gary, thank you very much. Welcome on in.
Hello, man. I sound like you're doing better. I just want to say a few things. These Republican politicians on the court, they're the blame for losing our voting rights. And on King's birthday, our King's birthday holiday, we have to be worried about this again. So, used to be the Bull Weevils down south that kept people from voting like that. But they privatized our Medicare, and then they're blaming Biden for the inflation. How about all these corporate profiteer bosses that are raising all the prices and the stock market's never been so good? And they're blaming them for the virus, too. How about these Trumpsters? I don't know how many of them there are. A lot of them don't get vaccinated. That's why it spreads so darn much. And I guess the corporations are in charge of everything, the media, the farms, and everything. So that's about it. And I say too much already, I think.
Oh, no, Gary. It's okay. I think it was only 18 topics today. Thank you, my friend. You brought up MLK. I will say this. We've got on Martin Luther King Day, Brett and I we've tried over the years to find kind of more unique clips from MLK. That's one of the nice things about Martin Luther King Jr. is he was around in the day and age where there is a lot of audio and video of him. And that is a blessing after his tragic loss that we still do have a lot. And I found an amazing interview that he did with the Merv Griffin Show in 1967. Merv Griffith, the interview, we're going to air that interview here. And then in the 5 o'clock hour, I'm going to play the second part of the Dolores Pringle interview that we did with Dolores Pringle from the Penn Center down in South Carolina, because that was where Martin Luther King Jr. was spending a lot of time at the time he was assassinated. He was spending a lot of time down there. He believed in that community. They actually had a cabin they were making for him. He unfortunately was assassinated before they finished it. But he spent a lot of time at the Penn Center. So we're going to air part of that interview where she, you know, the second part of that interview in that segment that she does talk about Martin Luther King and his connection to the Penn Center. That's coming up here in the 5 o'clock hour, plus of a lot of other things. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. Let's get caught back up. Let's take a break. Come on back, and I'll get into a little bit of coronavirus stuff when we do return. It is the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. You know, I being quarantined with COVID, it gave me some time to think. And one of the things that, have you heard the Republican trope that, you know, things used to be so much better? Why aren't things like Mayberry anymore? Well, I don't remember Andy and Barn basically storming the U.S. Capitol building and pooping all over everything. I must have missed that episode of Mayberry. But, you know, if you want to, I'm not going to go back with some, you know, white-centric based TV show and say, why isn't America like that anymore? Because, come on, please. What I will say is this, there is a difference in what we used to be and what we are today. And granted, I think that there were definitely racial boundaries back then, but you also did have within individual communities a caring for each other that just doesn't seem to exist on the levels that it used to. At least that's my perception. And I think a lot of it has to do with the rise of right-wing media, the rise of everyone's your enemy, you know, the mentality of the people you politically disagree with are not just people you politically disagree with, that they're your enemy and stuff like that. But the sad part is that we have become a very cruel society. And we are taking steps back, especially a society that you know, has, you know, a large portion of people that like to claim that they're Christian in it. Because there is an undeniable reality about America today, which is just really sad. And that is that you've got a lot of people who are perfectly fine with needless suffering. Perfectly fine with it. I mean, they don't care. Yep, fine with them. Some needless suffering, who cares? And that is a very unfortunate thing. A very unfortunate thing. What I mean by that is this, is that, and I want to be very clear here. The idea of, say, shutting down the schools and basically, you know, sending people home for 2 months and just saying, we're going to remote learn for 2 months. Hey, there are some definitive downsides to doing that. I'm not going to deny it. Teachers, many of them, their lesson plans are thrown out the door. It becomes a very much more complicated thing to plan for. Parents frustrated because they don't want to work from home, forced to have to work from home, trying to motivate kids that they don't really want to have to motivate. And then there's the kids, some of them who are get quite depressed about not being able to be in social situations. I am not dismissing any of those things. But the idea of sending people home and remote learning and just in schools, for example, the concept is this. Well, if we can prevent, say, 50 kids per class, per age, you know, for fourth grade or fifth grade or sixth grade, if we can prevent 50 kids from getting sick, and of those 50 kids, 10 of those families getting sick, and you say to yourself, how many of those families might have someone who has a compromised immune system? One, two? What you're doing is not just not having classes in person just to piss people off. You're doing this because you're trying to save human lives. One life. Just all you have to do is save one life. And if you can do that, I think you can make the argument that you justified the sacrifice. I think you can easily make that argument. And that's what we're talking about here, is we're trying to save human lives. And yes, I know for a teacher, it's frustrating to have to do an online, you know, curriculum. But if it saves a life, I think we can all agree that's the lesser of the two evils. I hope you would agree that saving the human life is probably more important than any inconvenience. Or the parent who is screaming about, you're inconveniencing me. Yeah, we are, but we're doing so to save a human life. You would think, especially in our Christian country, that would be okay. And once again, and the ones that I really feel sorry for are the kids in this scenario, because yeah, that's tough. Not having social environments, not having social norms, it is very tough. But if you save someone's life by doing so, well, I think you can justify it. Now, here's the point of the argument where the Republican will come forward and start screaming about, you're not saving any lives. COVID's not that bad. They're all dying of gout. Why are you lying? Blah, blah, blah. The reason why they scream is because they know what I just said is absolutely 100% right. They do. And they feel pangs of guilt to start percolating up in the back of their freaking heads. And so what they do is they start making up fantastical scenarios and lies and conspiracy theories and all these things to basically negate their own guilt for the selfishness that they can't help but putting out there. Because I'm not saying that these things aren't difficult. I'm not saying there's a good choice. What's to like? There is nothing to like here. These are bad choices all around, but let's take the options to save the human beings' lives. Or at the very least, not just sit there and act as if preventing 20 or 30 kids from getting sick is some kind of inconvenient sacrifice. That would be a good thing. I don't need to have children needlessly suffer for my own wants and needs. I don't need that. And nor should you. And if you are a person who is saying, oh yeah, I know some people are going to get sick, but I don't care, then go away. I don't know where you need to go to, but you suck. And someone has to tell you this. You're a horrible person. You really are. You're surely not Christian. So get rid of all your Bibles and crosses, all this stuff, and take off that Bible quote off your Twitter feed that you have up in your profile where you act as if you're all corner religious. No, take that down. Because the religious person, the Christian person, would be saying, yeah, these are inconveniences. No one likes any of this stuff. But if we can stop 20 kids from getting sick, if we can prevent one person from dying, that's a sacrifice we are willing to make. And it's not like we don't have countries where that is happening. There are indeed countries where they are putting in some serious protocols, and they do not have nearly the death count that we have. In this day and age, it's more important for the news outlet to say, I found some parents who have just had it. That's news. No, it's not. You taking the equivalent of an online chat messaging board and putting it out there is not freaking news. That's just stirring up dissent. And you never ask these upset parents saying, well, is it worth saving a child's life? And hey, at least they can be honest and say, no, not really. I don't feel the need to save anyone's life. You want to know what's wrong with America today? That when you sit there and you suggest wearing a mask, getting vaccinated, shutting down schools, shutting down work, getting things done to where we have the minimal amount of people sick or the minimum amount of people dead, which, let's be honest, is probably the higher priority, or at least it should be, for a compassionate, caring Christian nation. But that's gone. And there goes with it our nation of the past. We just don't care. We're selfish. We're selfish human beings. And we just don't care. Well, I do. I think we should be shutting down schools. Hell, I think we should be shutting down the airports, personally, especially in international flights, especially when something like Omicron comes out there. I don't think we should be running out there to find the most important thing is to find someone who can scream and bitch and moan about the policy. Hell, I can scream and bitch and moan about the policy too, but it doesn't do any good. And at the end of the day, my minor inconvenience, or even hell, your major inconvenience, is not more important than saving a human life. And if you think it is, well, screw you, you jackass. We've lost that. That is what we have lost. There is where whatever happened to Mayberry, whatever happened to the Andy Griffith of America, that's what it is. You become a bunch of selfish, self-centered jackasses that don't want to actually make a sacrifice for the betterment of our country, of the people, of your fellow man. It's only as good as getting down to the local sports bar so you can get your 2-for-1 cheesy poppers. When we realize that, and then, and here's the hard part, realize we need to change. then we'll start becoming a better country. Until then, this screw you, I'm in it for myself mentality, all it leads to is more and more needless suffering. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. We'll take a break, come on back. When we come on back, a great interview with Martin Luther King Jr. from 1967. It's about 11 minutes long. We'll air that when we do return. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. It is Martin Luther King Day. Martin Luther King Jr. Day. MLK Day. I think it's important. I've got we've over the last few years, we've aired some interviews and some speeches of his that have not gotten a lot of traction, in the sense being that they haven't been, you know, widely seen. I found one this year that is Merv Griffin's show. Of course, Merv Griffin was, you know, this is in the pre-Oprah days. He was one of the big interviewers. As a matter of fact, I would say, you know, he was, you know, probably as far as an interviewer goes, him and Dick Cavett were, you know, going back and forth as who was the best, and they were both pretty sensational. This, when you listen to this interview, listen to Merv Griffin and how much he likes MLK. Let's go ahead and play this. Brett, we'll take this. Will probably take us to a good chunk of the end of the show here. So here's Merv Griffin with Martin Luther King Jr. on MLK Day.
Here's the rare opportunity we promised you. I think Harry introduced him beautifully. May I just add that here's one of the great voices in America, Dr. Martin Luther King. Doctor, that we get a chance to see you in New York. Are we covered? Oh, yes, the microphone over there. Do you visit here often?
Oh, I'm in New York almost every other week at least. There's something happening in New York, so you can't avoid coming to New York.
You've discovered it's a fun city?
Well, I haven't quite discovered that side of New York. Being a Baptist clergyman, they keep me involved in other areas.
Right. Your home is actually in Atlanta.
Atlanta, Georgia. Yeah.
Have you lived there all your life?
I was born in Atlanta and went to school in Atlanta through college, and then I went to theological seminary and graduate school in the north, in Pennsylvania and in Massachusetts, and then I went back to the south for my first pastorate in Montgomery, Alabama, where I lived for 6 years. And then I returned to Atlanta in 1960, and I've been there ever since.
Do you have a church at this time in Atlanta?
Yes, I am the co-pastor of the Ebenezer Baptist Church in Atlanta, and my father is pastor, so we are working together there as a team.
Both you and your father?
That's right. They put up
Is there any seniority?
Well, he makes it clear, sometimes consciously and sometimes unconsciously, that he is the pastor,
right,
and I'm the co-pastor. Right.
Mrs. King, of course, lives in Atlanta.
Oh, yes. And she's from Alabama originally, but...
And children?
Yes, we have four children.
What would their ages be, Doctor?
11, 9... 6 and 4. We have 2 girls and 2 boys.
Are they in school in Atlanta?
Yes, they're all in school in Atlanta. Even the youngest is in nursery school, but the others are all in the public school system of Atlanta, the other 3.
How is Atlanta doing? And the whole state of Georgia?
I think Atlanta is doing pretty well. I would say that Atlanta is probably the most progressive city in race relations in the South. Now, that doesn't mean that we have all problems solved in Atlanta. It suffers from the same problems that all of our major cities are facing today. We have serious economic problems in the Negro community, and although the middle class in the Negro community faces a degree of prosperity, the masses of Negroes confront the same poverty and deprivation that we would find in any city. But at least there is a responsive city government in Atlanta, and the Negro is in the fortunate position of really having the balance of power politically in Atlanta, and this makes a great difference. We have, for instance, in the state legislature of Georgia, 10 Negroes, and I think 9 are from the Atlanta area, and this is because of the political power of the Negro and the power of the Negro vote in Atlanta.
Often, Dr. King, when there has been violence in a certain city, for some reason that I'm not sure of, you have been blamed. Am I right? In Chicago, yes. Some of the blame was put on you, and still you have never advocated violence. I know now you are absolutely against it. Why do they blame you?
Well, I think it is because of our wrong analysis of events and of history and of circumstances. It so happens that many demonstrations that I lead end up in violence in the sense that we who are demonstrating are inflicted with violence. And I always say that you can't blame nonviolent demonstrators who are demonstrating for their constitutional rights when violence erupts. This would be like blaming the robbed man for the evil act of robbery because his possession of wealth or money precipitates the act. Society must always condemn the robber and protect the robbed. Another analogy would be, and I saw this very clearly in Chicago last summer when we were demonstrating around the whole issue of open housing, and as we marched into certain areas that were lily white areas and that denied Negroes the right to live in those areas, we were confronted with a massive violence. Bottles and bricks were thrown at us. We were often beaten, and yet they called us the originators of the violence. And I always said that this is like looking at a physician who, through his skills, through his medical ingenuity, discovers cancer in a patient and blaming the doctor for causing the cancer. It's usually the other way around. We praise the physician for using his ingenuity to bring out into the open something that needed to be discovered and something that can be cured if it is caught early enough. And this is exactly what we have done. We can't be blamed for the violence that emerges. We've merely brought it out in the open. We've brought the evil conditions, the cancerous disease of racism out in the open, and far from being the cause of it, we are merely the catalytic agents bringing it out for everybody to see so that the society can cure it.
Well said. We're going to take a break and come back and talk, Dr. King, if we could, about the civil rights, where it is today, where it's going, and that'll be in 1 minute. We'll be right back. This book is titled, Where Do We Go From Here, Dr. King? Can you tell us, first of all, where we've been and how far we've come?
Well, I would say generally we have made some very significant strides. There's no doubt about the fact that we've come a long, long way since the days of slavery and since the days of rigid segregation. And one of the things that we can joyously point out is that legal segregation is dead today. If one travels through the South today, he sees a different South from the South of even 5 years ago. As a result of the Civil Rights Bill, segregation has ended in public accommodations and many other areas of life. Now, this is one side of the picture and a very important side, and it demonstrates that we've had many legislative and judicial victories that, in a sense, change the architecture of Southern society. But now we're faced with, in a sense, greater problems. We're faced with hard economic problems which will be much more difficult to solve. It's much easier to eradicate segregation, for instance, on buses or in public accommodations, than it is to eradicate slums. It's much easier to guarantee the right to vote than it is to create jobs. And we are in a phase of the struggle now which is really a struggle for genuine equality, a struggle to get rid of poverty, to eradicate slums, to get rid of the syndrome of deprivation surrounding slum life and economic insecurity. And this is where we must go now. We've come a long, long way in the sense that we've ended legal segregation, but we still have a long, long way to go to solve the basic economic problem that Negroes can.
This is a fantastic interview. Merv Griffin with Martin Luther King Jr. back in 1967. It pretty much ends right there. There's only about 20 seconds left at it. It really kind of gives you an idea. I'll share some thoughts on that when I do return. Hour two of the show, that's coming up next. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota, is the Matt McNeil Show, now COVID-free. Good to be back with you here. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. By the way, for the folks watching on the live stream, yes, it is the solid image picture because I do not have a camera here. I'm not going to turn on my camera. I'm not going to turn on my camera on my computer here, Brett. That's just not, no. I'm not going to. It's bad enough you guys get me when I'm in the studio. So when I'm broadcasting from home, we have to go with the ever pleasant still image of Matt McNeil. So there you go.
Yeah, I don't know if we want to be getting the cameras in the home studio. It could help on the OnlyFans page, though, you know.
Well, the OnlyFans page already does have a camera in there. Hey there, how you doing? It's focused on a specific part of my body, but I won't tell you which one. By the way, one thing really quick before we get away from that interview with Merv Griffin and Martin Luther King Jr., one of the things that interview highlights, two things actually. One is think about, first of all, I want you to think about this in regards to Black Lives Matter and how white people today, especially white Republicans that do not like the idea of equal rights and equal society and equal chances for African Americans, will always blame Black Lives Matter for anything. And even when white nationalist and racist groups go into a town and attack black people, what's the first thing you hear white Republicans sort of say? Oh, Black Lives Matter, you got to get Black Lives Matter under control. Now, you need to get your racist thugs under control. How about we say it like that? And, you know, that's, he brings it up. That's what, you know, he's saying marching for equal renters' rights in equal housing, better housing for the African-American community in Chicago. They'd be outright attacked. And then the minute they would get attacked, what was the narrative that was told? It's like, look at Martin Luther King starting up violence again. The other thing which that video shows, you really see Merv Griffin fanboy Martin Luther King Jr. You can tell he really does believe in what Martin Luther King Jr. stands for. And to a point, that was the threat to white America, was not only was Martin Luther King Jr. a unifying voice for the black community and other minority communities, but there were a lot of white people in this country who were starting to say, yeah, he's making a lot of sense. And racist white people were not about to have that. You know, that was kind of the mentality, is that he became even to a point similar, I mean, very different level, but it's similar to Barack Obama. Barack Obama becomes the president, and he was hated even more by them because it was proof positive that he appealed to more than just the African-American community, that there's a lot of white people in this country who twice elected him as president of the United States of America. And the mentality the white racist likes to think is the mainstream one is that white people don't like minorities and won't ever vote for them. And when they're or they don't like them. And so here you have Merv Griffin in 1967, clearly on his show, welcoming Martin Luther King Jr. onto the show and himself showing a great amount of respect, a great amount of adoration for him. And that was an even bigger threat to the white bigots than anything else. And look at white bigots today. When I bring up Obama, look at white bigots today and how they basically, what's their mentality? Well, you had your president. I don't know why you keep talking about equal rights. You had your guy. Isn't that? I mean, it's just, you know, these people are broken people and they just do not want to ever have to acknowledge the fact that the vast majority of Americans aren't racist pieces of crap like they are. How about we say it like that? 952-946-6205. Bad news for you, Brett. The state fair is going to cost you a whopping $1 more. If you were to pay attention to Rito's online today, you would think the state fair was going to cost $50 to get in. No, it's costing $1 more. And so it's going to be a little bit pricier. But they lost $1.3 million last year. And I was trying to think about the number of people that go through the gate. So if they raise a buck, you know, they'll make their money back, if I'm not mistaken. Are they about $1.3 million, something like that? Come through the gate at the state fair every year?
Yeah, it's, I don't know the exact, I know obviously last year the numbers were way down, but
no.
Yeah, I don't know for sure off the top of my head, but it sounds about right.
Also should mention that they are not going to have the same hours. They're going to open an hour later, so 7 a.m. They're going to close an hour earlier, which is 11 p.m., which I think on all around, I think that's a good idea. So I love a pronto pup, but am I rolling over there at 6 a.m. to have one? No, that's not happening. So that's going to be the new setup out there. Hopefully we'll be able to let the fair and, you know, things will be back to normal. I would hope. If we have to make changes, we have to make changes. Betterment of society, that sort of thing. All right, so for the rest of this half hour, we're going to come on back. I got some Minnesota coronavirus stuff to get to. Plus, I do want to take on that editorial a little bit from yesterday's Star Tribune. But for the rest of this half hour, we're going to go revisit, of course, one of the holiday interviews we had. And if you go, by the way, to our SoundCloud page, on our SoundCloud page, there's a playlist of all the interviews we did for the holidays. And so you can listen to every one of them. One of them was from the Penn Center, Dolores Pringle. She is, of course, a trustee down there. She was kind enough to join us. This is about 20 minutes long, and it includes her talking about Martin Luther King Jr. and the connection that he had to the Penn Center, which was actually quite extensive. So we're going to play this once again. It's the second half of that interview, but I do want to bring it back here on Martin Luther King Day in America. Dolores Pringle from the Penn Center right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota, continuing our interview with Dolores Pringle. She's a trustee from the Penn Center, an amazing historic site located on St. Helena Island, right out of near Beaufort, South Carolina, one that I highly encourage you to go visit because it is so important as far as history goes. We talked a little bit in the last segment about the original early history of the Penn Center and the beginnings of change there. Of course, a lot of that never grabbed hold because after Reconstruction and with the pushback from the white community, a lot of the great programs and projects that were discovered at the Penn Center, Dolores, never were able to take hold across the rest of the South.
Yes, absolutely. And if they were able to, especially the land policies, if the land policies had just been replicated in other parts of the country, we never would have had, you know, the disgraceful practice of sharecropping
mm-hmm.
that cropped up in other parts of the South. But the, again, those land, the land policies that were carved out, especially on St. Helena, where, you know, former slaves were allowed to buy large plots of land, they, that disgraceful practice never would have occurred in other parts of the South after the Civil War.
The Penn Center remained a stellar achievement, even as the rest of the South never did pick up on a lot of your trend setting ways, within in the Civil War and the days afterward, the decades afterward. But the Penn Center maintained its cause and its purpose. It became a bit of a respite area for Martin Luther King Jr. He spent a lot of time there, correct?
Oh, absolutely. It was his R&R location. He felt safe there. He felt protected. The islanders, of course, protected him. And he could relax there. He played baseball with the community members. He did a lot of his... He rested. Did a lot of his writings, did a lot of training and planning for the movement at Penn Center. And he came so often to Penn Center until, whenever he would come, he would always select the smallest cottage that we had, which is named for Hastings Gant, the remarkable man that I was talking about earlier. But he would stay in Gant Cottage, which was the smallest cottage, as I said, that we had. But the community and Penn Center decided that they wanted to build him his own lodging at Penn Center just for him. So they built him this house in an incredible location, very private location, on Penn Center's waterfront. But just as that house was completed, he was assassinated. He never had a chance to live in that facility. And so we started calling it King Cottage, and today it is referred to more as Retreat House. I'm not sure you saw that when you were there, because you have to travel a ways through the property to get to it. But it is a beautiful location, right on the banks of the water. But he would have so thoroughly enjoyed that resting and planning at that location. But he and his lieutenants, Jesse, we have pictures of him and of Martin Luther King and all his lieutenants, Jesse Jackson, Andrew Young, all of his lieutenants coming down to Penn Center. And planning during that time. And I think that the meetings weren't always, you know, smooth sailing. I think that they differed. I think that they had different ideas about what direction that they should go into, you know, for the movement. And we have some of those pitches, those deliberations of those pitches. Mm-hmm. And the amazing thing is that we have pictures of MLK at Penn Center out of his uniform. His uniform was a suit and tie. But we have pictures of him at Penn Center, you know, in short sleeve shirts or in sweaters, which is unusual. If you look at the many pictures of him, you just don't see him in that like that
well,
often.
And, you know, it's easy to see how that is the case, though, when you mentioned to us last time Penn Center in the 50s and 60s was one of only two places in the South where whites and blacks could sit down and discuss race issues without the fear of you know, something bad happening. When you describe MLK Jr. being there, you know, and being able to relax, there's a reason why. It's because Penn Center was leading the way in being a location where we could have discussions about race.
Oh, absolutely. And the other place was the Highlander Center up in Tennessee. But like I said, he felt very, very comfortable and very safe. And, of course, the islanders you know, looked after him. And so those were some amazing years. And after he was assassinated, the Penn Center staff found portions of the I Have a Dream speech in Gant Cottage, and they handed it over to the King family. But those were some amazing years. And in recent years, I guess maybe about when I used to be the chair of the Penn Center board, and when I was the chair of the board, we started something called the 1862 Circle, and oldie, that's been about maybe, 15 or 18 years ago, and we started inducting many of the people into that circle who come to Penn Center with MLK. The first person was Vernon Jordan, and then John Lewis, and Andy Young, and, you know, even Marion Wright Elderman. So a lot of the people who was a part of the group that would come to Penn Center, we've, you know, gone on and continued our relationships with them. We were going to induct Jesse Jackson into the 1862 Circle just the year that COVID hit us. And we had to cancel that event. But so we maintain our relationship with the with many of the people who would come with him to Penn Center. And we have an oral history project where we're trying to gather as many of those oral histories as we possibly can do for that era.
There is this god-awful, ugly element of America right now that is screaming against, you know, whether it's called critical race theory or this, but it's the mentality that, if I can be bold enough, ignorant people can scream away reality. They don't want to be hurt. And this is, as I discover the Penn Center and I discover the rich, important, incredibly important history of the Penn Center on all these levels, talk a little bit about that, because this is a disturbing trend that people, they for whatever reason, shame, fear, anger, racism, for whatever reason, they want to stop the history from being talked about. Not a bias history, but just the actual history. They want their whitewashed version of it, quite literally, whitewashed version of history. They don't want to hear about how Hastings Gant was a good person, or the Port Royal experiment was a success if it had only been applied everywhere else. They want to basically believe that the history that they want to be true is true. Talk a little bit about that, because this is a big fight ahead of us, I think.
Oh, absolutely. And it is so, and like you said, it is very disturbing, and it's very, very sad. And that is why organizations like Penn Center is so important. Because if we're not careful, the story will be retold in ways that is actually, you know, not correct. And but thank God that we've got, you know, organizations like Penn Center, we've got collections like Penn Center's archives, and Penn Center isn't the only organization, but it certainly is a pivotal organization to continue to tell the story. Because if we're careful, we will let other people rewrite history and retell the story in ways, like you said, that makes them feel comfortable. Mm-hmm. And that's not what history is all about.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah, history is not about making people feel good or feel comfortable. History is about telling a story that happened, and if that story was an unkind, well, I'm not going to say unkind, but if that story was a story that doesn't fit with what we're supposed to be in terms of democracy, you know, the answer is not to just wipe out that history. The answer is to understand it so that it will never happen again.
Amen. Amen.
And that's the beauty of history. And I mean, I'm a history major, and for a time in my life, I taught U.S. history and African American history, and I love teaching history, and I love opening students' eyes to how important it is. And that old adage, Matt, about if you don't understand it, if you don't know it, you will repeat it.
Yes,
that's what we see happening a lot right now. It is quite disturbing concerning what is happening.
No, it is.
And one of the most disturbing things about it is it's like, and excuse my expression for saying this on your radio show, but it's like democracy be damned. They don't care about democracy anymore.
No, they want their narrative
as
validated.
Yes, absolutely.
They want their narrative validated, and they don't care about the. And if the history doesn't match their narrative, well, then they'll wipe the history out. And my God, how many times on the planet have we seen that exact scenario happen? And it's going on again right now. You said it perfectly. This is history is not pretty, but it's the way that we react to what has happened with the full knowledge of what has happened that makes us better people. And that's what you have to do. It doesn't mean that you're a bad person because something historically bad happened. It means that you've learned, oh, well, that was bad. Let's not do that again. let's move past that again and move forward. And I think that's the important part. And that's why the Penn Center is so important. I've got to get to something here, Dolores, that I think is so important. And that is the we're talking about the importance of preserving the land ownership for the families of the former slaves and basically making sure that that their land stays their land. And this resonated when I heard about this project the Penn Center has tackled here. I was so impressed because up here in Minnesota we have a lot of lakes and we have a lot of original landowners who basically get wined and dined and sweet talked, and basically they find them all of a sudden one day they don't own that lakefront property anymore, and the next day a big McMansion goes up on top of it of some wealthy person that's bought out that land. There has been a project at the Penn Center, which is amazing, that you have gone out there and worked with the original landowners to preserve as much of the property for them as possible. Is that correct?
Oh, absolutely. And we've been doing that for years. We're probably the grandfather project entry in terms of trying to save heirs' property land. And it's important that we do it. There was a time when you know, people didn't even care about coastal land. And then all of a sudden, I guess it maybe beginning in the late 50s or maybe even the 60s, people started focusing on the coast of South Carolina and Georgia and realizing what rich and beautiful land was there on these islands. And they started, you know, building, you know, developments and retiring there. But Penn Center is, St. Helena itself is a holdout. Penn Center has worked with all along the coast on heirs' property. But, you know, have, in some parts, the holding on to a lot of the land has not been as successful as St. Helena. Hilton Head is an excellent example of that, where it has just become developed, and people have just been pushed. But you still have, you know, significant land ownership, Gullah Geechee land ownership on Hilton Head. But St. Helena is one of those islands that remained majority African American for years. Now the trend is, you know, is slowly catching up with us, but Penn Center has played a major role in helping heirs' property owners hold on to their land and helping them pay those taxes and understanding the tax laws and and not losing that land in tax sales and doing everything they can not to have that happen. And we still have a major land project right today. We're going to have a major conversation of just about the subject in February, where we're bringing in major scholars on this issue and the community together to talk about it. But the amazing thing, I just read a couple of days ago, and I'm talking about Hilton Head now, where in the last tax sale in October, there no Gullah Geechee land was sold, went up for sale. No Gullah Geechee on the Hilton Head side. I don't think very, very many places on the St. Helena side went up for sale either. So that tells me that I think that we're having an impact on this battle.
Well, and I think the real estate developers, they come in, especially after hurricanes or big storms, and they try to sweet talk these people out of their land. And you guys, and through your informational campaign, have shown them, no, don't. This is, you are going to end up on the wrong side of that deal anyway from Sunday. So you got it. I think that's wonderful. Whoever came up with this plan, my God, is that progressive? Because you're right. It's land that generally, starting since the 1980s, has been gobbled up and developed into the monstrosity mansions. And you've been able to maintain the culture. And I think that is so important.
Right. And the land is so tied to the culture. You're right. If you lose that land, you lose the culture. People are so tied and embedded in their land. And one way that the developers have done what they've done over the years, they, you know, with Ayers property, and that's why the Ayers property arrangement became so, in a way, dangerous. I hate, that's a strong word, but it's because they would find one heir who was willing to sell their rights, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you know, you find an heir that really needs money, and they sell their rights to a developer. And the first thing that the developer does, and like I remember what I said at the beginning of at the top of this conversation, is that a lot of this land was left in big parcels to families, and they call them family compounds. And the first thing that they do is they come in and if they get their hands on the rights to an heir's land, they come in and they build a fence.
Mm-hmm.
You remember that poem by Robert Frost? They build a wall, they build a fence,
mm-hmm.
and then people have a hard time even getting some type that occurs. Have a hard time even getting access to their own land when that occurs. Some of that has subsided a bit with education, the education that Penn Center has been doing around Ayers properties. And I don't know whether I ever did, on the last conversation I told you about one of the most successful Ayers property projects that occurred on St. Helena.
Well, I'll tell you what, Dolores, we are actually running out of time, but here's what I'm going to promise, because you and I still haven't touched really that much on the Gullah history, and we need to, I think, break that down a little bit more, and we can come back and talk about this, because we just burned out an hour real fast, and I still want to make sure I mention that this is so important. As you just heard, as you're hearing Dolores, it is wildly important that we preserve this history. It is insanely important. PennCenter.com/donate. PennCenter.com/become a member as well. You just go to PennCenter.com. You'll find all the links there. And Dolores, really quick here, you got the Mellon Project. You got some classes coming up here in 2022, which people can find out more about on the website as well, right?
Right, absolutely. Go to the website, and we are about to launch a beautiful new website. So go to the website, and the Mellon Project will be launching in June of 2022. We'll have some fantastic classes and workshops, this is a partnership between UGA, the Wilson Humanities Center at UGA, and Penn Center. And so definitely go and look and see what all is going to be happening with that project.
And like I said, you can find out about the projects that are going on there. Donate if you can, penncenter.com/donate. Become a member. Or if I can encourage you, because the area of this country is just magnificent, go down and visit. You'll have a good time. It's a magnificent part of the country, a very underrated. You can kind of avoid Hilton Head, per se, and just stay in Beaufort and go and visit St. Helen Island, Penn Center. There's a lot there. I mean, you don't need to go to Hilton Head. There's so much there, and there's so many great beaches and fun things to do. I highly encourage it, and you'll expand your history. Dolores Pringle, once again, a trustee from the Penn Center. Dolores, I'm going to have you back. We have more to discuss in a future interview. I love having you on. It's such an honor. It is an absolute privilege and an honor to chat with you. Thank you so very much. Dolores Pringle, kind enough to join us for the hour. We'll wrap up the hour when we come on back. It is the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950.
Thank you, Matt, and happy holidays again.
AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota, the Matt McNeil Show. Dolores Pringle, that interview, by the way, available up on the SoundCloud page. I'll link to that. We already have that up there. I'll link to that interview, full interview, and you should listen to that one. That one's a good one. From the holiday interviews, I'll repost that out a little bit later on. I'll also make sure I get out that Martin Luther King on Merv Griffin. That's fantastic. I mean, and you know, his answers are so succinct and so just amazing. And like, oh yeah, I mean, even the dumbest racist can understand what Martin Luther King was talking about. And I think that that's what made them even more mad, is that he was so good at conveying the problems in Black America to the white community. It's a great man. And by the way, if you get the chance to go to the MLK Memorial out in D.C., do so. It is really striking. And such an important memorial. Very much worth the trip. Very much worth the trip. By the way, Democrat of the Day starts back up tomorrow. Ken Martin's going to join us in the 4 o'clock hour tomorrow. We're going to talk with him about the upcoming election cycle. And so we're ramping back up. It's going to be a long, now I got 2 hours, so oh boy, I'll have a lot of interviews. This is going to be a lot of work, but we're going to get as many of these candidates out there, the representatives, the senators, and I want to make sure, very clear about one thing, we only have a finite amount of time, even with the 2-hour show, so we're only going to be interviewing DFL candidates on Democrat of the Day. By the way, Republicans, I'll do a Republican of the Day. I ask the questions. Who won in 2020? All right, that pretty much ends that. Hey, but I mean, I'll have a Republican of the Day. You want to come on my show? Come on by. Come on by. I'm equal opportunity. Democrat of the Day, we're going to be doing the Minnesota Senate races, the Minnesota House races, the U.S. House races, and any statewide race. I don't have time. I've already gotten a lot of people saying, hey, can you get this person on for county commissioner or school board? I'm not going to have time. Doesn't mean that they're not important, doesn't mean they're, but I'm going to just try to give as many House reps, senators, got to get them all on the air. And there's a lot of them. I mean, there's a lot of them. I got 180 so interviews just in the Senate and the House. And I've got, how many shows am I going to be doing between? I'm going to be double dipping on a lot of days. So we'll get into that. 952-946-6205. Ken Martin tomorrow with us right here on AM 950. Let's get into some more coronavirus updates. First of all, the man who was suffering from a severe case of COVID-19 being kept alive on a ventilator been moved from Mercy Hospital in Coon Rapids to a care center in Texas just days after a judge issued a restraining order after prohibiting the hospital from turning the machine off. Scott Quiner, 55, of Buffalo, was flown from the Twin Cities to Texas over the weekend, an attorney representing the family said. Now, first of all, I want to add just one thing. It's not really clear here. Is the hospital saying that even though the wife wanted him to not unplug the ventilator, that they were still going to do that? Because I don't know if this was a cost thing or what, but that's the only thing about this that makes me question about the hospital itself. There are a lot of things about this story which I'm going to get somewhat critical of the family here in a second, but that's the one thing about the hospital. So if, you know, if the family's like, no, keep him alive, we don't want you turning out the ventilator, I don't think you don't really have the right to turn off the ventilator, do you? I don't think you do. You can't, I don't think you can shut it off legally just because of debt. I think you have to kind of allow that to be there. You know, it's, you know, I don't know what the case is going to be, but I mean, I that's the only thing I have a question about with the hospital. I will say it does seem like the hospital was somewhat exasperated by this family because it sounds like they were like, well, why aren't you giving him the ivermectin up the backside? Now, I don't know exactly what other medications and other things that they wanted them to try, but it's a hospital. They're going to try to keep him alive. They were saying that he wasn't, they weren't willing to do things. I mean, it's, hospitals are not supposed to be like a grill your own steak place where you bring them on in here and then you just bring in a litany of concoctions to try to give them. Give them bleach. Give them ivermectin. Give them, you know, make them drink urine. it's not like a, you know, hospitals are not a grill your own steak place. Okay. You don't get to do it your way. You got to let the medicine people do what they're going to do. This is kind of interesting. You want to hear a loaded quote here. This is Marjorie Holston, a local attorney hired by Quagner's wife, Ann. Scott is now in a hospital in Texas and getting critical care. The doctor said Scott was the most undernourished patient he has ever seen. The last update I got yesterday was he had some tests been run. All organs are working except for his lungs. Okay, now I'm going to stop you. How is he the most undernourished patient the hospital has ever seen, yet every one of his organs outside of his lungs are working? Those two things should not be in the same sentence. If he was the most undernourished patient they had ever seen, which is what your implication is, Marjorie, the hospital was starving him, which I don't think they were, then none of it, many of his organs would have already failed. That's what happens when you're undernourished. You basically start losing organs. You're saying all the organs were working. Oh, but he was like, that's just you taking a swipe at the hospital. And it's kind of a stupid one because you contradict yourself here. If he was the most undernourished patient he'd ever seen, then how are all the organs working, by the way, outside of the lungs, which it doesn't sound like the lungs were been working for a while. Holston did not name the Texas hospital. Okay, let me ask you this. Why the Texas hospital? I mean, did you literally go find a hospital that's like a cook-your-own-steak place where you can basically bring in the ivermectin and drop his drawers and jam it up his backside and say, medicine? Is that what you're doing? Because, I mean, the Mayo Clinic is a pretty good hospital. The Fairview Hospital System, the University of Minnesota. We have a lot of good hospitals here if you didn't like Mercy Hospital in Coon Rapids. There's a lot to this story which is not being said because, like I said, if you're concerned about how things are going at Mercy, then why didn't you just take him to a local hospital? I think that this was much more about, I was reading up on Fox News' website, and they had a host on that talked about taking roaches and putting them up his nose, and that's going to solve all of his problems. You know, that sort of thing. I think that that's kind of what they're looking for. They're looking for the, you know, let's throw everything at him and see if it works. And the hospital's like, that's not how medicine works. Allina Health, which operates Mercy's, issue a statement saying it's grateful the family is able to find a healthcare facility that will meet their needs. That can't have been cheap to fly him down on a medical flight to Texas. Quagner's case drew widespread attention last week after Mercy said it would disconnect the ventilator on Thursday. They had to get a court order to prevent them from doing so. I don't quite understand that. I mean, because I don't think a hospital can legally, I mean, were you concerned about her paying the bill? Which, by the way, that's cold and heartless. You know, I understand there's a lot of need for ventilators in emergency rooms right now. But if he was on it, I don't quite understand what that issue was. But it also sounds like this family was of the mindset that they knew. I read on Google for 5 minutes. I'm smarter than you doctors now. So I hope Quagner's, I mean, I'll stand with what I always said. I don't want you sick. I don't want you dead. And I don't want you bankrupt. It looks like all three apply in this case. I don't know, you know, I don't know what your likelihood of his lungs restarting and working on their own again, but yeah, maybe this grill your own steak place hospital down in Texas will find something that gets this guy coming back. But two fundraisers to cover his medical expenses have generated a few thousand dollars, $28,000 on one GoFundMe. Give Send Go is like $41,000. I can tell you a good chunk of that's gone just on that hospital flight. So Minnetonka, Rochester have approved citywide mask mandates. I basically talked about this a little earlier with the Ridgedale Y, where the only place I think, you know, if I had to take a suspicious guess of where I've got COVID, it would be there. They've now got a mask mandate, so you're going to have to wear them now. That's good. On Tuesdays, Brooklyn Park City Council will consider adopting a mask mandate. Many suburbs have passed on it, but we have way too many people in this country today that are perfectly fine with people needlessly suffering, and I think that that's atrocious. I really do. Lakeville Community School District now changes. I posted this story earlier this week. This one is bizarre because I want to read the things that the Lakeville Community School District announced they're going to change. And none of this makes a lot of sense. Number one, a once weekly email notifying parents about positive cases and close contact instead of individual emails. What? So you're saying that if a child is exposed to someone with COVID on Monday, you're not going to let them know until Friday? That seems really stupid. No, I mean, that seems like monumentally stupid. You're saying to me that you're only going to notify parents once a week about positive cases and anytime there has been close contact, which means you could have a kid who could have COVID for 3 or 4 days before you let them know. It's like, oh, by the way, the little Billy over there was hanging out with three kids that had COVID. So oopsies, you might want to get them tested. Oh, and you too now. That's just stupid. No longer closing pre-K through grade 5 classrooms when there are 4 more cases of COVID. So I don't know how many kids are per class, but if 4 kids, I'm going to imagine that's a sixth of the classroom, 24 kids. A sixth of the classroom is sick, and you're not closing the classroom down. Okay. And here's the one that I think is somewhat inexcusable. And if a student is kept at home, learned, and is not sick, they'll be marked with an unexcused absence. Dude, if a person wants to be safe about it, don't be a jackass, Lakeville Schools. Seriously. The change comes at a time where I want to make sure you understand this. This is the school district, the educators. These are supposed to be people that are supposed to be intelligent on this stuff. This comes at a time when the case rate per 10,000 residents in Dakota County is 212.8, more than 4 times the threshold for a high transmission, which is 50. And they're out there making the kids less, you know, safe. The other thing about this story, which I found to be hilarious, is that all the parents that are furious with the school district about this, they're letting their names be known. Jenny Jungworth, Amber Slackson, they put their names out here, but I'm going to read this. However, parents who support the change, these are the bad changes, believe this isn't just practical. A group of 4 parents who chose to remain anonymous, cowards, cowards, if they're hiding their identity, that should be your first clue that they're basically knowingly taking the, I'm a selfish little jackass and I don't believe we should be making any mandates because I don't want to have to sit home with my little Billy. I want to go get my 2-for-1 nacho poppers over at my local. Why are you hurting me? This is hurting me, you selfish jackasses. You're anonymous. If they are that distressed about their children's health, Omicron isn't good. This is one of the anonymous parents. Because, you know, anonymity always is a sign of upstanding individuals. If they are that distressed about their children's health, Omicron isn't going to be gone in 2 weeks of distance learning. Good point. So maybe you should go for 4 weeks or 6 weeks or 2 months of distance learning to stop the needless suffering of sick kids and the deaths of some individuals who will die because of this. Don't give me this. I can already tell you these anonymous people like to, I bet you they sit there and say, I'm so Christian. I'm so Christian. No, you're not. You're a selfish jackass who's perfectly fine with needless suffering because you don't want to be inconvenienced. You don't have any problem with people dying because you don't want to be inconvenienced. That doesn't make you Christian. It makes you pretty much the polar opposite of Christian. Yeah, it does. 952, that story, dear God. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. We'll take a break. Come on back. One or two more issues before we get to the end of the show. It's the Matt McNeil Show on your Monday. Native Roots Radio coming up here at 6 o'clock. Make sure you stick around with Robert Pilot and crew for I Am Awake. Right here on AM 950, an absolutely outstanding show. Did want to make sure I mentioned, the Biden administration has launched a website where anyone in the U.S. can sign up to have 4 free COVID-19 tests sent to their home. The sign-ups begin on Wednesday, according to the site. The tests have been in short supply in the past several months. COVID cases tied to the highly contagious Omicron variant have surged. People traveled for the holiday season. The White House said when announcing this plan that more tests would go out at some point to each household, but that depends on the supply. But these tests are not designed to be shipped out of your house, out to your house once you start feeling sick, though. Says tests will typically ship within 7 to 12 days of ordering through the U.S. Postal Service. So they're going to get the tests out, and that is a good thing. 952-946-6205. So just really briefly on that obnoxious editorial that the Star Tribune aired yesterday. Now, and I brought up the point that this is the reason why I canceled my subscription to the Star Tribune, is because I got really tired of them running far right editorial after editorial after editorial on Sunday, the paper that had the highest circulation rate, and then on Monday airing liberal rebuttals on the lowest circulation day and saying, see, we prevent both sides. No, you've got an agenda and you're pushing a crap agenda. And the Star Tribune, it's not just the fact that there has been on many occasions, I've seen a palatable Republican narrative in just their regular stories. It's not just the editorials. For God's sakes, Andy Mannix, who is a fantastic journalist, has had 2 or 3 unbelievable stories about the police in Minneapolis, which should have been the beginning of full and just investigative reporting, and the Star Tribune buried both those stories. They aired them, but then they quickly got them off their front page and buried them. I don't like newspapers that give narratives. But this one, and by the way, in case you missed it, was we can't teach the actual history. We can't teach the actual history of what happened to African Americans with slavery, the Native Americans, other minority groups, because white people have only been taught the whitewashed version of history, and they like that version of history, and they don't want to actually learn the actual history. So if you do teach this, not only did the editorial lie about no one's ever going to teach anything about George Washington ever again, lie. I mean, it kind of this, all the things that are not going to be taught, which is she's just making that up, as well as also the idea, the knowledge of kind of outrageous, you know, study, you know, plans and topics that are going to be discussed, which are just fake. But the reality is what this represents is not only had the Republicans, they've been so successful at manipulating the media of this country, they're now going to try to manipulate actual history. Very Soviet Russia. We're back tomorrow. Till then, see ya.